Yeah. Apparently, the plane went down in a more remote area of Osamondo. Thankfully, Gawain had his comm on him and got a message to him. Yeah, he got separated from DeForest and Cassidy and almost became goulash. Too soon? What? He's fine. No, I knew they'd be fine, or I wouldn't have sent them to Osamondo. Doesn't matter how I knew, I just knew. Yeah, she's pissed. Now, she's threatening to take him away for good. She's had enough of my crap. Might be for the best. Things are just getting worse around here. But at least they've learned a bunch. There is a lot more they need to know. Coming to you straight from the most reliably biased source on the Matrix, this is the Anarchy in Podcasting Network, and I am Opti. Welcome to the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. 2063 is on our ravenous radar for today, and we will get to that in due time. But first, allow me to introduce a new segment for our show, which we call Dear Opti. You listeners send in questions via the Matrix, you know how to find me, and I will answer them on the air. Here is the first crop of questions. This first one comes from Thomas Cross. Dear Opti, help me convince my adept that Chrome Free ain't for everyone. He's getting on my last nerve. Well, Thomas, this is fairly typical, I'm afraid, and it ain't just a problem with adepts. Metahumans from every stripe can get rather snooty about their life choices versus everyone else's. People look down on others when they don't have the same religion, same metatype, same lifestyle, or even just because they don't come from the same corporation or nation. So I guess what I'm saying is, this ain't really a problem of chrome or no chrome. It's a problem of your chummer's insecurity. And I'm a big proponent of helping others become the best they can be while not dragging others down. So, if he's a good chummer of yours, share your feelings with him. Something like, hey, Ryan Mercury, it makes me fraggin' mad as Drek when you keep prattling on about your magic muscles being superior to the chromed among us. Knock that Drek off, or I'll run with someone else who can avoid bringing their humanus wannabe attitude into our relationship. Grok me? And, if he's not such a good chummer, just give him a dose of Narcojack and drop him off at a razor bar. Move on with your life. Next question also comes from Thomas Cross. Dear Opti, double stuffer soy burger or bacon stuffer soy burger with soy cheese? And my answer is double stuffer, oh my. Quantity over quality every time. Next question is from UGE Plex. Hoy, chummer. I'm a big fan of dem ancient flat flicks dey forever run on low-band tridio feeds. If you swatch them, which do you tink are most wizard? Well, Mr. Plex, you sure have opened up a can of worms. You see, I sank an awful lot of wasted time and effort into watching Fifth World media. All I have to say is that I have built up quite a repertoire of old favorites. In no particular order, some of my favorite flat trids are The Empire Strikes Back, Unbreakable, The Mission, Usual Suspects, The Burbs, Mystery Men, Serenity, Pulp Fiction, The Princess Bride, Gandhi, Guardians of the Galaxy, Dead Poets Society, Groundhog Day, Flashdance, and The Crow. If we're including cartoons, I really enjoy Avatar The Last Airbender, Batman the Animated Series, and Young Justice. Ask me about my taste in music sometime. We'll be here all day. The next question comes from Dakota Crooks. Dear Opti, I am running a CorpSec team, and there's a mage giving us trouble. How should we deal with him? Easy, chummer. Stop working for a corporation. Problem solved. Next up is from Trey. Dear Opti, without outing anyone that doesn't deserve it, what is the worst run you've ever been on? That is a deep question, Trey. And I have to say, at least one of the worst was when I got hired to put a team of mojo slingers together and go take out a toxic air spirit that had taken up residence at a dairy farm. If you could imagine me and four other hardened mages failing to keep our composure together while heaving up everything we had for breakfast, trying to contain this spirit who kept manifesting as a brown mist, that's all I'll say about that. How about this next one? Dear Opti, most of my chummers spend every cred they get on whiz-bang gear and bleeding-edge wear. When they don't get ganked out in the world, they come home to squat apartments and nil accounts. If a runner is looking to the future and wants to leave with something left, where should he be investing? From Derek. Well, Derek, the lure of buying Drek is a powerful one, and for a lot of runners, it isn't just about buying the latest and greatest. For many, shopping for new things is the only form of therapy they'll accept. Coming down from a job when they had put their life on the line puts them in such a state that they see no other option other than to self-medicate with new gear, new chrome, new guns, or even new mojo. In order to combat this, do your spending before taking any runs, and plan ahead for when you'll be done, and what sort of things you can do to calm down. And as for money, investing in any kind of permanent housing is problematic in our line of work, unless you also want to purchase the security necessary to keep in good condition once the Johnsons, enemy runners, and scorned lovers come calling. So, what I did for a while was to find a nice storage unit uptown, and that's where I put all my important dreck. I got one of the good ones, spent a little extra on the ones with magic defenses as well, and rented out places where I slept by the month. I always stayed pretty local, in one neighborhood, for example. That way I could get to know the locals, and then after a while of building relationships with the hood rats and the old folks and the gangers, I found a nice place to make more permanent, where I could set up wards and barriers, but also know that the community had my back. Once I had enough, I got a recording studio. But it's been blown up a few times, so I'm clearly not doing this right. But you do you, chummer. It'll work out. Unless it doesn't. Joel asks, Dear Opti, Bulldog Stepvan or Gaz Nomad? Apples and oranges, chum. Of course, if I'm on a run and I want to be able to get all my Deckers gear, Hackers drones, and Street Sam's guns in one place while being able to pose as any other devilry van, well, of course the Bulldog is your choice. But if you want to put some fishing poles, swimsuits, and beer in the back of a pickup and head out for a relaxing day or two, get an old Nomad any day. I have an old Nomad myself. Of course, it's been modified to be more energy efficient, as most of the older models were energy guzzlers, but I still love it. Next question comes from Vendetta Violent, who, incidentally, chummers, you should be hearing a lot more from very soon. Dear Opti, does your mojo truly come from Raven, or does it actually come from that trip mustache? Inquiring minds gotta know, because that thing is aces. Well, there are, of course, a few ways to answer that question. First, does my mojo really come from Raven? Now, the truth is, I've devoted many years to answering many variations of that question, and I suppose the answer I am most comfortable with now is, not all of it. A lot of my magic isn't specific to my mentor, Raven. In fact, Raven hasn't always been my mentor. That is a long and heartbreaking story. Nevertheless, a lot of my power does come from, or perhaps it is better to say through, Raven. And since we're talking about it, let me know if you want to hear more about all this magic-y mumbo-jumbo. Got a lot to say about magic, but only if you little crows want to hear it. The second part of your question is much easier. Most of my non-magic mojo does indeed flow directly from my terribly tender tash. Alex asks, Dear Opti, how tall is Rainbow Smite? Well, I asked her what she was up to. She said, practicing music. Anywho, she's about 1.8 meters tall. Dear Opti, this one comes from Mr. Clean. I've been running for a while and my crew and I are tight. The same can be said with the fixers we use. With being a pretty tight-knit group, there's always a certain degree of comfort when we interact with our fixers. Of course, the conversation always comes back to the business at hand, but when you work with someone for 10 years and put your life in the hands on many occasions, they tend not to mind if you ask how the family's doing or how you're holding up after the death of a friend or colleague. But for those runners who aren't as familiar with the shadows as us, can you give them some advice on not only how to get a fixer, but how to get one that won't take advantage of them? After so many years of being with the same people, I'm afraid that we have lost touch and seeing through the bulldreck. Your chum, Mr. Clean. Aw, geez, this one's tough. Because the thing is, there's really no telling what kind of fixer you're going to encounter. Grizzled, dreckhead, grumpy, ugly thugs are often the ones who will shoot you straight, while the ones who look like they stepped out of a romance tridio and speak softly to you often do so while they're selling you out. There's really no way to tell unless you spend too much time with them, and by then it's usually too late. The caveat to this is to try to find someone who is recommended by someone you already know. For example, you know I'm good, so if you're in the city formerly known as Bug City, call me. I'll hook you up. If you happen to be in Seattle, there are a few guys I know. The first is Bull. I won't say he's a gentleman, but he treats his runners right. He's old school runner stock. And second, check out and see if Roger Shaw is hiring. He's slightly mob connected, but he's old school and might not have a high tolerance for taking crap or unprofessional behavior, but if you're on the level, he wouldn't ever go behind your back. And if you aren't in Chicago or the Emerald City or can't find someone you know, here are a few suggestions. If you happen to be in SoCal, look up Nuclear Kenny. He's one of the best in California. If you're in Denver, my chummer Reese Frenzy, a fellow anarchist, will hook you up with some jobs working for the people. And if you happen to be in the DFW sprawl, make sure to check out a guy they call St. Giles. Don't let the name fool you, though. It won't be nice work, but you'll be going after bad people. Of course, the trick to dealing with any fixer is to realize that they have very little incentive to screw you. They're looking for solid runners that they can sell as sure things to Mr. Johnson's far and wide. And while you can bet that Mr. Johnson will try to screw you 3 times out of 5, you can probably go your whole shadowrunning life without being intentionally fragged by a fixer, even if they hate you. Hope that helps, Mr. Clean. That's it, Crows. Send in more questions, and I'll answer them. Now, because 2063 has so much in it, I've decided to leave off the stuff having to do with Sheer Tarangira and the Matrix until next time. But for now, let's hop into the mystery of history for the geopolitical criticals of 2063. In January, Crime Time, the orc rock musician, releases his album Johto, which has a distinction of being the first album recorded almost exclusively in Orzhet, the ancient orcish language. Almost immediately, a slew of copycats showed up, and the genre of music called orcsploitation is born. February sees the Sovereign Tribal Council open talks between the Tsimshian and the Salishe governments to resolve disputes that the STC feared might be a prelude to war. On May 1st, the new European Economic Community, or NEEC, or NEEC, is put into effect. The NEEC is the economic union formed of many European corporations and countries formed to bring stability to their regions and bottom lines. The Sixth World being what it is, you may have guessed this, but later that year, a suborbital plane crash kills 144 passengers, including the NEEC representative Rudolph MacDonald. However, also present on that flight was Carl Manstein, the Matrix engineer for the wireless Matrix giant Erica. On May 5th, King Philippe VI of Spain dies. Scandal rocks the country when it is discovered that the true firstborn son of Philippe is an ogre named Alfonso de Alba. The nation is bitterly divided as many, including the Catholic Church in Spain, reject Alfonso and instead support the heir apparent, Prince Juan Carlos. 2 months later, in July, Juan Carlos, much to the chagrin of the Spanish Catholic Church, gives up his claim to the throne and allows Alfonso the Ogre to be crowned without further interference. In the summer of 2063, the Polish Liberation Army successfully defends itself against the Russian and nationalist Polish forces attempting to stop its revolt. Meanwhile, in Russia, the city of Volgograd, formerly known as Stalingrad, is battered by fierce mana storms which continue to wreak havoc on the city for the next few years. Further, General Secretary Arkady Korolenko took a leave of absence, allegedly to recover from some unknown sickness. In October, the peace talks between the Salishe and the Tsimshian fall apart. And King Kamehameha V turns over rule of Hawaii to his son, Brandon Ho, who is crowned King Kamehameha VI. Transitioning into corporate news, on August 29th in Seattle, UCAS Military Major General Angela Colleton informs the city that the control of the Renraku Arcology Skyer is being transferred to the Seattle Metroplex Guard and declares it liberated, despite claims that Renraku has had everything under control since 2061. The Arcology is renamed the ACE, or the Arcology Commercial and Housing Enclave, and the first 5 floors are converted into a giant commercial mall. The 200 stories above the mall were retrofitted by the government to be housing for residents on welfare. Anyone is allowed to check in, but once there, residents seem unable or unwilling to ever leave. This is difficult to verify, Little Crows, since A, no one has come out to tell us, and B, no one with any clout cares about what happens to the poor. And I suppose I should also mention that to this day, the top floors of the former Arcology remain sealed off to everyone. If anyone has any data, you know where to find me. On January 4th, an explosion at the Misuhama Thaumaturgical Research Lab kills 19 personnel that were studying a meteorite from Mars. On February 7th, Ares military forces put down an assault led by California Protectorate General Saito. In Germany, a sort of shadow war had been taking place between Proteus AG and Sauter Krupp. This came to a head in 2062 when Lofir killed Nachtmeister, who was pulling the strings of Proteus. However, once Nachtmeister was killed, Proteus continued to operate, albeit without the Draconic leadership. Proteus seems to have developed a sort of hyper-survivalist corporate ethos, and this manifested itself in the production of vast arcologies of one sort or another, with his current crown achievement and research center being at the Romo Arcoblock. Around that time, it became known to some that Proteus had survived this long and had been so successful by having infected other AAA corporations with sleeper agents that stole resources and diverted them to Proteus. However, once Proteus overstepped its bounds and made an attack, or I might say was made to look like they made an attack, on an Ares submarine, Ares Macrotechnology ended that small shadow war by calling down a Thor shot, which obliterated the Romo Arcoblock. And if you're not sure what a Thor shot is, think the damage of a nuclear weapon, but no radiation, just a big boom. Currently, Ares and Sutter Group are the only corporations known to have one. On June 23rd, Patrick Goodman, the founder of Cavalier Arms Limited, was found dead in his home. And not just dead crows, dead. Shot 12 times by his own trademark six-shooters. Alexander Kane, the CEO of Kane Heavy Industries, was arrested by Lone Star for the murder. Kane was quickly released, however, without much explanation. However, Kane Heavy Industries received a fat payday soon afterwards for restoring a submarine base in Louisiana for the Cass Navy. This one has always bugged me, Crows, because I know there's a lot more to it, but my sources are telling me that we might get some more info on this sooner than later. In July, a UCAS federal lawsuit is filed against Novatek by Northwest Financial because they defaulted on a corporate loan to the tune of a billion new yen, which led many to speculate that Megacorp was in serious danger of failing. In August, quite a few bigwig media people and high-powered industrialists formed the Horizon Group. Former SimStar Gary Klein is appointed CEO, and as you know already, Little Crows, this self-proclaimed socially and environmentally conscious group does so well at PR that it makes its eventual way into the land of the AAA megacorporations. Stay tuned to see how that unfolded. Also in August, a 16-year-old girl beat Damian Knight in a chess match. Good for you, Christine Anderson. And by good for you, I mean good for you for resisting the extraction attempts by the corporations and being true to the Dice Men, as well as using your headwear to humiliate Damian Knight publicly, making extractions that much more difficult. Rounding out August, Michael Davenport, COO of Dockwagon, is shot, and then, while being transported, he is killed when the vehicle he is in is destroyed. My sources tell me that instead of being dead, Davenport rather faked his death in order to found Rose Croy. And I should probably mention that in January, Yamatetsu Corporation, in cooperation with Russia and the Pacific Prosperity Group, launches a manned space mission to investigate Mars. And on September 16th, they succeed. Of course, you and I know, Crows, that this was the third Mars landing, and the second of which that was manned. However, if you are part of the sheep that only follows the corporation news, then this was touted as the first successful manned mission to Mars. Once it landed, the Valentina Tereshkova transmitted live footage from the Martian surface. My hidden crows tell me that they did indeed get footage of the pyramid and the bones of the creature, however that video is somewhere locked tight. Not all is well with the return trip though, as we'll discuss later. In the shadows of 2063, the Triad War in Hong Kong ends when the Yellow Lotus Triad is destroyed by the Red Dragon Association. In May, Dylan Risius, the Orc Magician, is charged as the Flatline Killer, having murdered 12 metahumans. Finally, I leave you with this. Rounding out 2063, here are some magical tidbits. Wild Druids in the UK performed a rather large and intricate ritual by which they unleashed a great deal of latent mana, creating what is known as the Wild Ley Line. And in July, the Atlantean Foundation, along with various shamanic groups, protested the banishment of spirits at Mount Kilimanjaro by various corporations. But you will never be banished, even though you have wasted an entirely good slot of time listening to the Anarchy and Podcasting Network. In closing, I want to give a hearty hello to our newest Patreon supporters, which receive monthly offerings of neo-anarchist street gear. Freshly included in this illustrious list of capable crow funders is Christina Mitten, Mac, Kelly, Matthew J. Lemon, Damon Wilson, Jules Watts, Mr. Clean, and Caliburn. Thank you all. Everything you need to set up and maintain a neo-anarchist cell in your area, which, at various levels, now includes new stickers every month, patches, dice bags, fake IDs of all sorts, contact sheets for Opti and his crew, USB cred sticks, whiskey glasses, and an upcoming album full of sixth world musical malarkey will all be delivered to your safe houses as we march bravely on. The music serving as the background to Audible Anarchy was written by the legend Marshall Parker and reimagined by Unanimium 88. This was the Neo-Anarchist Podcast, and I am your host, the totally triumphant, truth-telling, table-turning, toll-taking, taboo-tackling, Taco Tuesday-tasting, toasting tall tales, trolling tear tangerine, tagging tasteless tabloids toward true tabulated tips, tinted, terrible, tiptoeing, talismongering, and tomfoolering towards tailspin, Opti. Enjoy your freedom, and then come talk to me so we can compare notes.